I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Brian Miller. Brian is the Executive Vice President of the Northern Kentucky Homebuilders Association. And let's talk about housing. I'm seeing more sold signs. It feels like there's more activity. What are you seeing?
Well, if we go back and look through our numbers, a lot of the nation bottomed out in 2009. We actually bottomed out in 2010, so we were a little bit a year behind that. We're a little bit late coming out of it, too. But what we've seen since the middle of last year is a pretty marked improvement and actually an acceleration on new home building, specifically single-family homes, but much more so in the multifamily market.
Multifamily seems to be a big deal right now. Mm-hmm. Is that because many people can't buy single-family homes because they can't get loans?
A lot of it bears its weight upon consumer confidence. So we've got people out there who've had jobs, who have kept their jobs. We have a lot of people that have been doubling up, and they're getting out of those situations now. As a matter of fact, that's probably the largest portion of what we have. We have, you know, young professionals, people that have finally decided to move out of mom and dad's basement, or mom and dad have made that decision for them, and they've gone out into an apartment rental situation. Nationwide, we're a little concerned in that we may be overbuilding apartments. This may be the next bubble, because 3-4 years from now, when those jobs continue to improve and they do get into the single family home market, they do form families and get into that living style for the years to come, that we may have a glut of vacant apartments. Not so much here in Northern Kentucky. We never seem to overdo things or underdo things as far down as the rest of the country goes. But in a lot of the other markets, we're really seeing a glut of apartments right now. If we look at our data, our apartment construction and multifamily construction is already normalized.
Well, coming out of the recession, are there any new trends in home building? I mean, are people wanting less in a house, mm-hmm. less money, but also less size?
Well, that's more of a long-term trend we're seeing. What we've got right now is a little less first-time home buyers on the market, which normally equates to a smaller home. A lot of those came in and were incentivized by the first-time home buyer tax credits that were incentivized around 2008 to 2010. What we have right now is what is a more normal recovery, and those are those pent-up demand buyers, those people who, for whatever reason, because they saw home prices lowering or they were worried from their confidence level, from the stability of their job, they're now beginning to come out. So we are actually seeing larger homes right now for a higher value. Now, will that be a long-term trend? Probably not. But it's going to take some years before we get back to something that we can consider a regular trend.
Well, it's probably also a lot easier for people to sell their existing homes or at the price they want.
the inventory level of existing homes is extremely low. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why the fuel and the gas is behind the new home building industry right now. People had been to a situation where they were not going to move into a home unless they sold their current home. But we're hearing many, many stories where people are still doing that, but they're going into a rental situation for 6 months during the build process. So there are homes out there that are on the market that are for rent for only a six-month lease in order to have a new home built. And as that inventory continues to dwindle in the secondary market or that resale market, home building has really stepped on the gas. Home prices are going up at an accelerated pace, and we're quite encouraged by what would normally be, in past histories, a normal recovery from a major recession.
So if someone listening would like more information about the Home Builders Association,
right,
what's the website they can get to?
Our website is homebuildersnky.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Brian Miller. Brian is the Executive Vice President of the Northern Kentucky Home Builders Association. And I feel like good news is coming. It's here. It's getting better in terms of housing. And I know that housing is up, certainly compared to where it was in the last few years. But what about housing values? Are the values of homes also rising?
Yeah, and specifically in our market, they started picking up last year. They were up around 5% for single-family homes last year. And already in the first 3 months of this year, they've risen about 9% over and above last year.
When homes have risen roughly 15%, mm-hmm. does that allow people who have maybe been sitting on their homes to sell those homes to get into new ones? Are you seeing that kind of a trend?
Yeah, I mean, it's like people start looking at housing as an investment again. And you know, it may not be a blowout like what they had in 2005, 2006, and the last person holding that home was always the one that took the hit. But they have the confidence. And when they have the confidence that the home values are going up, they know that they can put it there as an alternative to having to shelter it elsewhere.
Well, how do we compare, Brian, to the rest of the country?
Well, again, you know, Northern Kentucky, the greater Cincinnati market, is pretty conservative. We never get really out of whack high or low, but pain is pain. We were down 80% single family production just 2 years ago, over and above what we were in 2006, 2005.
That's a remarkable statistic, isn't it?
It is, and the housing market was overheated. We weren't as hot here as we were in other parts of the country. But if you look at markets like Phoenix, like Las Vegas, like some areas in Florida, what we call the sand states, those are coming back the fastest. As a matter of fact, Phoenix home values just in the last few months were up 40%.
What's driving that value increase so quickly?
We got way too high, and then we got artificially low, and that pendulum is slowly coming back to the middle. And there's been a lot of cash investors into those homes. They know that many people will end up in a rent situation. So a lot of the markets like Las Vegas and Phoenix, those smaller home, large tract developments are getting gobbled up by investors for a rental position.
Well, obviously with interest rates so low, housing is becoming more affordable to a lot of people. Is it hard to get a loan if you're a new home buyer?
Loans are a little easier right now. There are still programs out there for you. In portions of Northern Kentucky, we actually have a USDA, Department of Agriculture, Section 502 Rural Development Loan Program. And it's actually a zero-down program, and it performs very well because there's fees involved. There's actually no cost to the taxpayer, but that's mostly in the southern portions of Boone, Kenton, and Campbell County. Credit seems to be freeing up a lot more for the mortgage buyer, but not for the builder and not for the developer.
Well, who qualifies for that zero down loan? Because anytime you've got a zero down just makes me a little nervous as a financial person.
Yeah, you do have to have a particular credit score. So it is a higher standard than what your FHA loans are. You have to have a credit score in the high 600s. You have to have a good ownership history. Can't have any defaults on your record. But it's more for the folks that, you know, just don't have that wad of cash to be able to sink into a home or a gift that somebody's able to give to them. But so far, the default rate on those is under 2%. So it's a very low issue with regards to the taxpayers. And because there are fees up front during the life of the loan, it doesn't cost a taxpayer a dime.
I would assume that there haven't been many new developments of property, you know, major developments mm-hmm. for land in the last several years since the recession. Is there still enough inventory for the home builders for lots?
Finished lots, no. We have a lot of lots on paper, several tens of thousands across the three county areas in Northern Kentucky. You know, we ask a question to ourselves after these pent-up demand buyers, these move-up buyers are through the market in 2 or 3 years, what's that lot going to look like? So are we going to end up with a 100-foot lot, or do we need 60-foot lots? And so we may have to go back in and retrofit some of the developments. We may have to go back in, and hopefully there won't be infrastructure in the ground that we have to mess with.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today I want to talk about something that's in the minds of a lot of people that may be impacted by it, and that's this recently passed Senate bill. So it's not law yet, but it's a U.S. Senate bill that would require online companies to collect sales tax no matter where they're located.
And it's fascinating to me, Tom, because the Senate bill that you're referring to is, quote, bipartisan, which is something that you don't hear very much about. So this particular piece of legislation did gain bipartisan support from both the Republicans and the Democrats as it went through the Senate. And I think that there's a lot of merit to what they're proposing.
Well, I'm guessing that if you're Kentucky or Ohio, you're going to get a net benefit from this bill because I think you'll have more people paying sales tax and companies collecting that you weren't getting, then you have companies that are going to have to pay sales tax to other states.
Yeah, bottom line, the way it works right now is that if a large online retailer has a presence in a state, then they're required to collect sales tax from people who purchase items online if the person lives in that state.
Yes. For example, Walmart is in virtually every state, so they have to collect sales tax even on their online sales.
However, another company who may not have a location, a physical location in Ohio and Kentucky, but yet people living in Ohio and Kentucky may purchase on their online site, that company may not have to collect sales tax. So it puts them theoretically at an advantage from, say, a brick and mortar business who does have a facility in our state who has to charge their customer that additional percentage for sales tax.
And the argument against this online sales tax in the past has always been that it's too burdensome for a company to have to collect sales tax in 50 states. And, you know, in Ohio, it's, what, 80 counties or something, and they all might have different rates. So this legislation, which is, again, just proposed at this point. It hasn't passed the House, and it'll probably change. But this legislation does have some pieces in it to make that part easier. There is a minimum. I think right now it's $1 million. That might get raised. So if you're under that, you wouldn't, you know, be covered by this law.
So effectively, for example, small businesses who just operate their organization over the net would not be required to collect sales tax. So, and those are really the companies where they're going to face a large burden. They don't have the infrastructure, the employees in-house to really collect the sales tax, make the sales tax remittances. But large corporations, you'd mentioned Walmart, they're already doing this. My own opinion is that to the extent that you have companies collecting or doing business in states, then why would they be exempt from sales tax when the guy next door who literally has a shop selling the same merchandise has to collect the sales tax, effectively raising the price?
So you think it's a good law?
I think it's a good law. I think it's a fair law. What should be happening right now is that people, when they purchase these items, for example, if you purchase something from Bloomingdale's and you live in Cincinnati, you don't have to pay sales tax, but what you're supposed to do is pay use tax when you file your individual income tax return. Now, the reality of it is most people don't do that.
It's estimated that there's $11 billion in sales tax that goes unpaid as a result of this, and that number, absent a law, will go up every year because online becomes larger and larger every year.
I also heard a statistic that suggested that if this law goes into effect, that brick and mortar stores will be able to gain more traffic because people will stop buying online. They'll just go down the street and get their merchandise. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, the state of Ohio is about to do something that the federal government hasn't done for a number of years, and that's have a balanced budget. Of course, they're only doing that because they're required by law to do so.
Governor Kasich in Ohio has put forth a proposed budget. It certainly created a lot of controversy. The House put forth their version, and now the Senate is contemplating what its version is going to look like.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of confusion about that because they had the internet sales tax bill passed the U.S. Senate. Kasich's budget included a large expansion of the Ohio sales tax. So a lot of people didn't understand what was going on. Actually, neither one of those proposals at this point in time have become law. And it does not look like the Kasich proposal is going to become law anytime soon because the House nor the Senate seems to have it in their bills.
Governor Kasich's proposed sales tax was a sales tax on services, and that did not get very far. Most people just absolutely did not want to have anything to do with that on either the House or the Senate side. So it does look like that is not going to occur. One proposal that was in Governor Kasich's plan that I think personally is very good, especially as it relates to small businesses, is his proposal that exempted $750,000 of income from Ohio income tax for small businesses who operate their organizations as pass-through entities, like LLCs, sole proprietors, and partnerships and S corporations.
That is a great provision. That was not in the House bill. The House, I think, decided to give a 7% income tax cut across the board, so it would go to all people, all individual taxpayers.
But if you believe that part of the reason why the income tax is being cut is to make Ohio more competitive and to increase jobs, the Senate's saying that as a state, we're better served by allowing small businesses to keep more money in the form of taxes by putting that exclusion in there so that they can then keep that money, turn around, and create jobs. All you hear about is the fact that small businesses are the backbone of the economy, the organizations that will create jobs. So that provision makes a lot of sense.
Well, particularly considering that in Ohio, large corporations, which tend to be C corporations, not pass-through entities, pay no Ohio income tax, whereas small companies, which tend to be pass-through entities, partnerships, limited liability companies, S corporations, they pay at the marginal rate of the individual owners, which typically is over 6%.
Yeah, that to me is just a completely unfair provision that the largest corporations in our state pay not a dime of income tax, but yet small businesses, family businesses, closely held companies pay tax at the highest marginal rates just as individuals do, regardless of whether they're keeping the money or not.
So hopefully this provision will pass. But I guess the good news is that in both cases, they're talking about tax cuts, both the House and the Senate. They're not talking about tax increases.
It's confusing. There's a lot of information, and some of this may actually get sorted out in the conference committee. We'll just have to wait and see. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jill McBride, and Jill is the president of Forza Marketing, formerly known as J.Z. McBride & Associates. How did you come to the conclusion just recently to change your whole name, your brand, to Forza?
So Forza is an Italian word, and it means strength and fortitude, and colloquially it means let's go. And what happened in the evolution of our company is when I started the business in 1996, for the first 7 or 8 years I was consulting, I had small children, I was working from home, it was just me. And at that time, having a name that was tied to me personally made sense because people, our clients were really just buying me. But as our business has grown and evolved, and now we're a downtown firm with 10 employees, just felt like our old name didn't really serve us well anymore. That it didn't explain what we did, and that it, you know, it just wasn't brand enhancing, and it was really too tied to me.
What do you say to firms who have names in the brand?
Sometimes it works. I mean, there are lots of examples, even in town, of companies that are people's names where they have great brand recognition. Really, you're weighing the pros and cons of the equity and the name recognition that you have, which you are essentially giving up, and the upside potential of having a name that sort of better positions you for growth in the future. And in our case, we decided to take the leap.
Well, what does Forza Marketing do?
So we are a marketing, full-service marketing and public relations agency, and our work falls primarily into four key areas. So the first is public relations, and that's everything you'd think about when somebody would come to us and say, how do you get us in front of the media? How do we get them on this radio show? How do we get them in the newspaper? The second bucket is really marketing communications, and that's all the other marketing work, whether you're building a website or you're doing an ad campaign or we're doing email campaigns or marketing collateral. In addition to that, we obviously do work in social media because you kind of have to today. It touches everything, so we certainly have a practice around social media. And the last piece we have is around event management. We will go in and run an event for a client. So, you know, for our clients at the Urology Group, we run a charity 5K, 10K for them, or we'll run a trade conference for somebody. But a big piece of our event work is helping our clients get on the podium. So it's going to somebody like in your firm and saying, what are the key conferences where it would make sense for you to present? And then how do we package you and put together a proposal that gets you on the podium in front of those audiences?
Well, what types of companies do you work with?
So locally, we work with Rookwood Pottery. We work with the Urology Group, which is the actually the ninth largest urologic specialty group in the U.S. So they're a great asset for Cincinnati,
I'm sure,
but they're big.
Because of your great work.
But they're big. We work with a software company called Ascribe. We work with Nielsen Catalina Solutions, which is the joint venture between Nielsen and Catalina. We work with KMK Law and another company called Online Rewards. So we have quite a few local clients now, but our largest account is actually still not here. They're a loyalty company based out of Toronto called Loyalty One, and they develop strategies and programs that recognize and reward customers, like frequent buyer programs or frequent stay hotel programs, those kinds of programs.
And Jill, folks listening today would like more information about your company. What is your contact information?
Absolutely. You can find us online at forza-marketing.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jill McBride. Jill is the founder and president of Forza Marketing. What are some of the key things that you try to help your clients with?
The first thing that we do is to really figure out what makes them unique. What do they have? What do they do that sets them apart? And then putting their energies behind differentiating and putting forward that key point. That's one of the first things that we do and that we encourage brands to do.
Representing many, many service companies as well as companies that manufacture or sell products, are the marketing efforts, the PR efforts similar, or are they very distinctively different?
You know, it really just depends. We talk about using the right tool for the job. Sometimes clients come to us and they come to us initially with a PR assignment and they say, you know, we're changing the name of our software, and we want you to get press coverage. And our advice to them is, well, that's not a news story. Well, you have to use the right tool for the job. So, you know, luckily we have enough breadth of service that, you know, that may work very well as an advertising campaign or an email campaign, or there are lots of other ways to get that word out. But public relations isn't the best tool for that kind of an assignment. So we try to, you know, align the right tool with the right job.
What kind of mistakes do you see companies making that maybe don't have an expert outside marketing agency?
So I think the first one is kind of using the wrong tool for the wrong job. The other thing we see a lot on the PR side is companies, especially when they're in trouble or when they're in the hot seat or when something's gone wrong, that's the point at which they tend to not want to communicate with the media. And it's generally the worst thing to do. Our advice is always, if you don't tell your story, the media is going to run the story anyway. And if you don't speak for yourself, somebody's going to speak for you. So we try to help them understand the importance of being their own advocate.
How do you teach someone so that they can be prepared to go in front of the media?
We start with, you know, what are the key things that you need to communicate? And then we coach them and we try to teach them in putting that information out in a digestible news bite formula, you know, in a sound bite.
If someone's on a limited budget and they really can't afford to have a full-blown marketing plan covering everything from print media and advertising to sponsoring events, what would you say the best use of limited marketing dollars are?
You don't even need a website. We can do all this through Facebook. You know, and that is virtually free. It's not entirely free because we're managing that for him, but we can build his followers. We can get his messaging out. And, you know, it used to be there were sort of some basic things you had to do. You had to build a website. But with the advent of social media, it's, you know, everybody can be a content provider.
Well, to that point, are you seeing some big mistakes, though, with companies and people using social media?
For sure. We often have clients come to us and say, well, what's this Pinterest thing? We should be on Pinterest. And we look at them and we're like, no, you don't belong on Pinterest. You belong on LinkedIn. So I think there's a tendency to hear what the flavor of the day is and think you need to jump on that bandwagon. And again, it goes back to that use the right tool for the right job.
Now, folks would like to learn more about your company, Forza, which is a brand new name. It used to be called J.Z. McBride & Associates, now Forza.
Forza Marketing, and you can find us online. And there's a wealth of information on our website, including our blog, which we blog 5 days a week about advertising and marketing and public relations. So it's a great resource if somebody wants to learn more. It's forza-marketing.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are John Lucas and Tom Hortel. John is with Bright Star Partners, and Tom is with High Five Innovation. And Tom, I think you founded that organization. You both are going to be speakers at an upcoming conference that the Claremont County Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring this coming fall. And it's about technology. It's called the Business Technology Summit. Let's talk about technology, because regardless of the size of your business, technology can really help you grow.
I came out of the Emerging Technologies Group at Procter & Gamble, where we used to evaluate the opportunities that new technologies can present you. And we would try to incorporate, where appropriate, we would incorporate those technologies into our consumer products as we develop them.
And John, I know your company actually helps small and mid-sized companies embrace technology and really leverage it to grow.
We do. At Bright Star Partners, we help mid-sized companies understand how to leverage technology and, more importantly, the information that's flowing in and out of their organization and around their organization, understand how to leverage that. So everything from social media to transactional information within the business, and understanding how to leverage that into meaningful insight into who their consumer is and how to best optimize their business is what we help companies do.
Well, if you're a business leader, what would you expect to get out of attending this Business Technology Summit?
Well, I think the big thing is at this summit, the Chamber has assembled really a pretty compelling group of thought leaders on this technology and innovation topic. It's kind of a one-stop shop for business leaders, C-level executives, and decision makers for small and mid-sized companies in the Cincinnati area to gather together and hear in one forum all of the hot topics that are, you know, present in today's industry.
John, let's talk a little bit about your topic. You are going to be speaking of innovation. I know that you're very involved with the Inventors Council. How can business people, small, medium-sized businesses, really use innovation when they're so sometimes stuck just in the day-to-day stuff? How do you encourage them to be innovative?
Well, it is easy to get bogged down because you tend to want to do things the way that you've always done them. It's really important to look to the future and figure out how you can use emerging technologies in a way that help you change and evolve your company and develop a strategy that's going to carry you into the future.
John, what do you see as the biggest issue that's facing small businesses? What's the thing that holds them back, the obstacle that doesn't let them move forward with innovation and technology?
You know, I think the biggest thing is maybe analysis paralysis. See, there's so much going on in our day-to-day lives, and there's so much innovation evolving literally by the day that I think business leaders just don't understand where to start. And I think that's really the highlight of this summit is in a condensed block of time, they'll be able to hear from business leaders from Dunnhumby to IBM and other sources to hear really how they can leverage technology to drive success in their businesses.
Well, and don't you think businesses are afraid that as soon as they invest in something, it will become outdated and then they'll need to make another investment in the next, you know, social media platform or whatever it is they're doing?
That's a great point. You know, cloud is a good example. Everyone's talking about cloud. Should I jump on the cloud? Does it apply to me? Can I afford it? Where is it going to be at in 3 years? That's one of the topics that will be talked about at the summit is, you know, is it time for the cloud? Is it matured enough to a point where businesses really should be leveraging that? Those are key topics that businesses are curious about today as they try and decide where to make investments in technology. Does it make sense for them? Those are all things that we look forward to talking about at the summit.
Thank you, gentlemen, both for being my guests. If people would like more information about the summit to register, they could go to claremontchamber.com or call 513-576-5006. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are John Lucas and Tom Hortell. Both of these gentlemen are going to be speakers in an upcoming seminar presented by the Claremont County Chamber of Commerce called the Business Technology Summit. I guess all business leaders have to be interested in technology at this point in time, whether it's from a marketing standpoint, you know, how you run your firm. Technology has an influence on almost every type of business. Today we hear a lot about the cloud. What are some of the things people should think about if they're looking at cloud solutions?
You know, I think you have to be careful with the cloud. You know, the truth is that it's a technology that's still maturing. There are limitations in terms of bandwidth, so the big hurdle that companies have to really consider is how much data are they going to be moving to and from their business, in and out of their business, and what's the need to upload that in real time. So really the limitation on that is bandwidth. The industry has matured to a point where you can store large amounts of data up in the cloud, but getting that in and out of your front door can be a challenge sometimes. So that's one of the key things that you really need to consider before you move your business onto the cloud.
And it makes the reliability of your internet connection fairly important.
It does. You know, I think most of us probably think that the internet never goes down. The truth is that's not the case. And when you have 80 or 100% of your business relying on an internet connection and that goes off, 5 minutes can seem pretty painful.
And Tom, what you're going to be discussing at this summit is innovation.
Yes, I've been playing in the innovation field for several decades now. And a few years back, I had the opportunity to work with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to explore some potential methods to boost the crop yields in sub-Saharan Africa. I'm always looking for opportunities to be able to leverage technologies that can actually change lives.
And John, you also had some experiences working with some pretty high-profile clients with cloud solutions.
We have. Right here in Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Zoo uses IBM software to gain insights from their business. You know, I think a lot of people have a tendency to maybe glaze over when you start talking about technology. So at this summit, we're going to be jumping into some real-world tangible examples of that. For example, the Cincinnati Zoo kind of lives and dies by the weather. You know, what happens at their gate really is heavily influenced by weather patterns. So they leverage IBM software to actually be able to understand and predict what their attendance is going to be based on the weather forecast in the National Weather Service. Other insights that they're able to gain using technology is they found out that about 11% of their ice cream sales occur before lunchtime, and that's helped propel higher levels of customer service and revenue at the zoo.
And what are some of the other highlights people can look forward to if they attend the summit?
Well, the keynotes are going to be very compelling. I think the attendees should see it as a privilege to be able to hear from the North American president of Dunnhumby USA. He will be speaking on customer loyalty and their work with Kroger, as well as a partner from IBM speaking about how cloud and big data and all of that can be leveraged in small and mid-sized companies right here in Cincinnati.
And throughout the day, there's going to be a series of speakers presenting different topics. At each point, you'll be able to select from about three or four different speakers and choose the topic that most interests you.
Well, if a business is interested in participating in the summit as a sponsor or as an exhibitor, how would they go about that?
There are sponsorships still available in the event. They can contact the event, the chamber, at 576-5006 or at claremontchamber.org. And it'd be a great opportunity for organizations to get in front of those individuals.
And people looking to attend the conference or find out more information can also go to that ClaremontChamber.com website or call the number that you just mentioned, correct?
That's correct. Yep.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Eric Schweitzer. Eric is the Director of Awareness at Life Learning Center. And Eric, Life Learning Center has been around since 2006. It's a nonprofit. Let's talk about the people that you serve.
Really, the people that come to see us are folks who are living crisis to crisis. Probably poverty level income is a big issue for them. And the majority of the folks, about 60% of those are women. And they come to us because they're not sure what else to do. They're living day to day in a crisis, and they're trying to figure out what's next.
And how do you help these folks? How do you help them get back on the right path?
Through our program, we help them build confidence. We help them to figure out a purpose in life. We help them to get over any barriers that they have. You know, about 40% of the folks we serve are folks with a criminal background. And so they feel paralyzed, like, nobody wants to hire me. And so we work with them to help answer the tough questions when an employer says, hey, tell me about what happened. We help them come up with ways to address that, take ownership, and to move forward.
Are most of these drug-related incidents?
They're really across the board, quite honestly. You know, we recently had somebody who had a felony for theft from an employer. A really hard thing to overcome. We're helping her to own up to that and be able to talk to her employer about what happened.
Have you seen a rise in people who come to your center wanting help because of the economy? Have you seen more people feeling hopeless?
Yeah, we really see a lot of people in our community who just don't know what to do. You know, they've been living day to day, their financial straits, they're trying to figure out, you know, how can I get out of this? They don't know how, and we help them develop the skills so they can put a plan together and move forward.
And so if somebody comes to your facility, your center, have you, maybe without naming names, can you share some success stories?
Oh, absolutely. There's a gal who came to us. She had a successful business. She was in her mid-30s with her husband. They had a company. They got a divorce, fallen into kind of the drug trap, and ended up getting a criminal conviction, and was here actually in Covington on parole. You know, once she had served some time, found us as a walk-in, and then we worked with her on kind of building herself back up. She started at a local restaurant, and now she has her dream job, she tells us, and she stops in regularly to say, hey, I just want to share some love with you guys.
How many people do you serve every year?
We serve about 100 people, so it may not sound like a big number. We try to get really deep and really close to those folks.
And to that point, is it one-on-one sessions, group sessions, all of the above?
We do some of all of the above. We've got classroom education, we've got group coaching, and one-on-one coaching with each of the people that come through our center.
So if someone listening today might fit in that category, somebody who really does need some help getting back on the right path, or maybe they have a loved one or a friend that they know that can use that kind of help, how would you suggest that they take that first step in actually coming to the center?
Well, they can check us out on our website, but really we'd invite them to call us and schedule a get-to-know-you appointment, because our program's not for everybody. We're selective about the people, and the big requirement is they have to want to make changes, and the other one is it's a drug-free program. You got to meet those requirements, and we try to dig in a little bit to make sure that they're going to stick with it.
And do you help some of these individuals take the next step and actually find a job?
Absolutely. We've got partner employers. We have people that come in and help do mock interviews with them, and so we prep them. Once we get them through the program, try to connect them with employers we have relationships with who I like to say are forgiveness friendly. You know they might have a little bit of stuff, but they've worked with us, they've owned it, and they're trying to make positive movement in their life.
So someone coming out of your program, an employer can have that level of confidence that they've taken the steps necessary to really make an effort to put their life back on track.
Absolutely.
If folks listening would like information about Life Learning Center, how can they reach you?
They can check us out on Facebook, but also at our website, www.nkyllc.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Eric Schweitzer. Eric is the Director of Awareness at Life Learning Center here in Northern Kentucky. And Eric, your organization has been around since 2006. You've helped many people get their life back on track. Let's talk about what the typical person who comes into the center, how you help them move on to the next chapter.
About 60% of the people we serve are ladies, and a fair amount of those are single moms with two or three children a lot of times. 40% of the folks that we serve have some sort of criminal background or record that we need to help them deal with.
Do you help people also who have just maybe had a job at one point and something happened in their life, they got sick, something happened to them individually, now they don't have a job anymore, and just helping them get back on track too?
Absolutely. You know, we know the stories of people been at a company 20, 25 years, something changes, and now they're out of work. And we find those folks sometimes kind of spiral a little bit because they've only had that one job. They don't know how to move forward, and they just get stuck. Through our program, we help them to get unstuck, find a vision for what they want to do, and then we work with them one-on-one to make sure that they can land at an employer they're going to be happy with.
And how does your program, Eric, differ from other similar types of nonprofits?
There are a lot of nonprofits out there trying to do the right thing and help people get connected. And when our center was founded, what the founders saw was more of some band-aid approach to helping people, more, hey, let's give them a little bit of lift or maybe some financial incentive. We really work with people long-term. It's a 16-week program. You know, they meet with group coaches, they meet with individual coaches. And I think we go deeper and really get to know people and provide solutions for them across all of who they are, not just with the work side of things.
Do you do an assessment up front and find out what their goal is and then help them very strategically and systematically work towards that?
We do try to get to know where they'd like to go. Quite honestly, you know, one of the things we hear is we talk about SMART goals and trying to set those. A lot of the people we serve haven't even set any goals in their lives. And so we try to help them figure out what that looks like. And at the end of the first week, we do a vision board with them. So we ask them to think about their physical well-being, mental well-being, emotional well-being, financial well-being, and spiritual well-being. And what would that look like if you're successful in this program? What would life look like? How would it be different in those areas? And then we help them put a plan in place so they can achieve those
goals. And you can do that in 16 weeks?
We get them moving. You're right, it is a big request. But for a lot of these folks who haven't done any of this, the average age is about 35. So if they haven't seen or done this, we got to get them started. Lest they keep doing do something different,
they're not going to end up.
Absolutely.
How do you say to people out there who've just been stuck, what would you say to someone who maybe just hasn't admitted yet that they need help?
The big thing for us is referrals from our other candidates. That's where we get the majority of our folks is people who've been through the program. Their friends are the people that are stuck a lot of times. And they talk to somebody else and say, oh my gosh, so-and-so told me I had to come down and talk to you guys. What are you guys about? And then we show them, you know, a lot of times we'll get another member or somebody maybe at the center that day and can share their testimony. And when they hear the testimony of somebody else that's had a similar life experience, then they're hooked.
Do you have some of the previous participants come back and volunteer for you?
Absolutely. We recently just launched a alumni connections program, and we talked to them about what would you like to do? What could we do for you? And it turned around, they're like, what can we do for you? We want to give back because you've changed our life. Life is different for us now. We want to help the center and also the other people who are just coming to the center to find success.
What's your contact information?
They can reach us by phone at 859-431-0100 or on the web at www.nkyllc.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.